Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Start managing your data, not your infrastructure. Unified, simple, secure. Welcome to Data Done Right. Only with the Pure Storage platform. Get started at purestorage.com.
This week in Retronauts, I used to go to a chip shop in Hunstanton called the Flying Battery. That's completely untrue. Welcome to the episode. Hello, I'm Stuart Gipp, and you're listening to the Good God. Which number part is it? I've completely forgotten.
Four.
Number four. We're doing the fourth one of these. The fourth part of the Sonic 3 and Knuckles unbelievably deep dive. As I've said before, you know, the listeners, they asked for this. They wanted me to do Sonic content, and they didn't know what they were asking for. Mm. Like, they were not ready. Nobody was ready for the depth that this is going to go into. Like, when this is complete, I genuinely believe it's going to be a piece of significant cultural criticism. That's my opinion. It should be in the Smithsonian. It should be in the British Museum. It should be on the official Sonic website.
It just shouldn't be something anyone listens to.
It's either that, or it's going to be taken as like a significant piece of performance art.
Yeah. But who's with me today? I'm going to start with the old... let's do it in alphabetical order by first name like usual. Who's here today?
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you, and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hi, I bet mine's first. I'm Dave.
Were you thinking? Did you have to think about it?
Yeah, I was just working out. Yeah. Okay. No, what I was thinking is like, Shaymay's his real name, isn't it? Yeah, okay, yeah, okay, okay. There's not another name on it. Okay. Mm. Stuart, that's an S. Okay, okay. Hi.
But of course, it's Gaelic, so it actually starts with a C.
Oh, dear.
The thing is, you can get me with that. I'm not going to argue with that. That could be true. I don't know.
I usually call you something that starts with a C as well, so it all works out.
Hello, I'm Dave Bulmer. Should I say anything more than that?
No, that's okay. Not necessary. Everyone already knows this. This is completely formal. Like, they just have to get this out of the way and then get stuck in.
Yeah.
And who else is here today, as if anyone doesn't know already?
Hello, I'm Shame. I was here the last few times.
Yeah.
Please refer to earlier intros.
Yes. And we have finally, we are now into Sonic & Knuckles. We're only one zone deep. And we've covered Mushroom Hill. We covered the entirety of Sonic 3. We've even done a little bit of exploring around the fringes of the game.
We've had a little look in the fridge as well, just before we started this.
We have, yeah. We had to put a rotten egg in there to make, you know, create Eggman in the first place.
To
excuse me, Robotnik.
Who? Thank you.
Robotnik, sorry. It's marketing.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah, it is. I don't think deep, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it shouldn't be. Listen to Sonic the Comic the Podcast, everyone.
But yes, we're onto the Flying Battery Zone, and you know, it's an interesting zone. You get picked up from this enormous spaceship that you grab onto as it flies across the Mushroom Hill Zone, mm-hmm. being piloted by one of those little mole things, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or at least there's one there, which is a bit weird. Like, the idea that this tiny mole is piloting this enormous battleship is quite funny.
That's the most important thing that mole has ever got to do, because normally they just sort of sit there, don't they?
They do. They just throw mushrooms at you.
I quite enjoy the anachronism of a lot of Sonic's... I like iconography.
Mm.
I like that. Oh, we need a flying character. What is he? He's a fox.
Yeah.
Oh, we need a pilot for this great big spaceship. What is it? Is it a bird? Is it an eagle? No, it's a mole. Of course, it's a mole.
I mean, that goes back to Sonic 2, where it's kind of like, we got a flying level. What do we need? Giant tortoises with tiny tortoises piloting them.
That's not what anachronistic means. That's about time. I'll tell you what's anachronistic is the fact that Tails has got a wartime biplane. Now, that's anachronistic.
I'm going to fucking trinistic your knackers in a minute. Shut up.
No, you're absolutely right. Anachronistic does mean that.
Yep. So there.
It's not anachronism. It's a malapropism. That's what it is. It's a malapropism.
Oh, God, is it?
It's idiosyncratic. How about that?
Move on before Dave figures out that I'm wrong. Like, hurry up. So yes, the transition for Flying Battery is one of my favourites. Actually, I really like it. When you think about it, it doesn't really make an enormous amount of sense, because the whole thing was clearly like overgrown. You know, there's like, you're under forest, but suddenly this thing just comes through and it's just kind of there. And the fact that Robotnik was transmitting this kind of climate control thing. And then sort of flies off and joins in with the flying battery. It all just kind of comes together in a way that I find very appealing. Like, just say, yeah, of course he escapes to this thing, and then you jump on it, grab the side, and you're immediately in flying battery with some of the raddest music you've ever heard in your entire life. I love
good.
I love the first zone theme of this. The second one ruins it a bit.
Oh, I disagree with that. I actually think the second one. Yeah, I think so.
I mean, the second one is good, but it has that beep, beep, doo, doo over the main...
That's what I like.
Melody, which I don't like very much.
I like it.
See, I like them both.
Don't like pee pee doo doo.
I'm like flying battery music anachronistic. Sorry, I mean agnostic.
Well, that's nice. That's good to hear. But the flying battery zone, I mean, it's kind of the Wing Fortress zone, isn't it? Like, in design, like, it's not obviously identical. It's got its own little, like, plenty of its own gimmicks, but, like, you know, going underneath it on the platforms over the sheer drop and then going back inside, it does feel to me like the Winged Fortress quite a lot. It's like a redux of that zone. But there are lots of cool ideas which we're going to have to dig into. I mean, what's your sort of impression of this zone, Shay?
What I wanted to pick up on is, you were saying, like, the transition between Mushroom Hill and Flying Battery is impressive. It's especially impressive, of course, as we've covered, Flying Battery was originally supposed to be between Carnival Night and Ice Cap,
mm-hmm.
I believe. I really like this one. I'm gonna spend a lot of time today talking about the character of these zones again, but I really like the character of this one as very smooth and fast and rapid. Like, this is kind of a bit, it has more of a frantic pace, which is perfect for Sonic being at, like, kind of stuck in the heart of one of Robotnik's operations, like one of his main machines. But I also absolutely love that we've got some context, like, here, because it's called the Flying Battery, which is an odd name for, like, just a big, like, spaceship, airship rather, but it's called the Flying Battery, of course, because that's where he keeps all the capsules that he keeps the little critters in, who serve as batteries for his robots.
What?
Yeah.
I love it.
I always thought that it was battery, like, here, like salt and battery, like, here's a battery, it's going to batter you with its battery.
It's like a isn't that what it is? It's like a gunship.
Yeah.
Is a salt and battery what they used to give you in your chips?
Oh.
Yes. If they didn't like you, yeah.
Oh, dear.
But I don't know if there's any reality to that at all. I've grown up assuming that battery is like an old word for a gunship of some sort. I don't know if there's any truth to that. It's entirely
It is, because like if you have an array of guns, I'm not sure the exact the specific circumstances, but I believe you would call that like a forward battery. So you could well be right.
So a flying battery is that.
Yeah. Well, if you have any thoughts on what exactly a flying battery is, readers, then by all means leave comments, because I would love to know.
Of course, when I was an actual kid, actually playing this on the Mega Drive, I just didn't know what it meant, and I thought it meant a big battery. It is a battery. Well, we must have a big tele remote to plug this into. Cool, look at the size of this.
A big Duracell.
Yeah. A big Duracell, yeah. I did wonder if maybe the point was that it plugged somehow into the Death Egg.
Oh,
like it was part of the Death
the
Egg.
It's the flying battery.
Oh, that would be cool.
That actually would be cool.
What a cool idea.
Yeah, I know, I'm full of them. Hi, I'm Sega. I've got some great ideas for Sonic. Here's the first one. Why don't you make a game that isn't a piece of shit? Just give it a go. So, yes, I mean, talking specifics in this zone, there are a few things that I absolutely love in this zone that just bring me enormous joy. Mm. And they're very Stuart Gyp, they're very sort of idiosyncratic small things. Sorry, they're very anachronistic small things is what I mean, obviously. That's the meme for this episode, by the way. For example, there are some areas where you have the usual, you know, the groups of three spikes that crop up, the little bunches of spikes. Mm. And there's one that's by itself, and if you run into it, you push it. Like, the spikes get pushed to the right, and they're actually blocking a hole you can drop into, a secret hole.
I don't think I know about this one.
A beautiful secret hole.
Yeah.
And it's got a giant special super ring in it.
I love a beautiful secret hole.
First of all, I have a beautiful secret hole, but
I've got a giant ring.
That's completely fresh way. Yeah, okay. That's a completely fresh way to hide a super ring, for one thing, that you'd only find if you were just dicking around or being curious or happened to notice it when you accidentally ran into this thing. Because I usually push up against the spikes to ensure that I'm right next to them. When I jump over them, I won't land on them, you know.
Yeah.
But when you do that and you just see, oh, hang on, this is moving.
Mm-hmm.
That's the kind of thing that makes me love a game when they are willing to hide things that way. I mean, there's also a one-up that's hidden in the ceiling at one point, which brings me enormous joy.
It's hold right to win in Sonic.
Yeah, hold right to win. Yeah,
okay, now on that, there is... So I really like the Flying Battery Zone, but there's a lot of fussing about in it. There's a lot of waiting.
Yeah, there's a lot of waiting. Absolutely.
Waiting for stuff, and sometimes, you know, and like making the wrong jumps. I mean... How about that trick fire shield near the start of level one? Near the start of act one. You're given this... You're dropped down into this little chamber, and there's a couple of monitors, and one of them is a fire shield. And you go, brilliant, I've got a fire shield. I can do my flake, because with the fire shield, when you jump and then press the button again, you shoot forward as a fireball. So you go, great, I'm going to do this. You go running along, there's a little lip for you to jump off. You go, I'm going to do this, and you do a big fireball along, and you instantly die, because where you've just jumped out into is just open sky with some really specific moving platforms you have to slowly and methodically get across.
No. No, man, no, honestly.
What happens to me?
Well, what happens to me is I go out there, I've got my fire shield on, and because I am God's gift to gaming.
Yeah, yeah.
You skim across the top of them using the fire shield. You can do I don't know, there's something about
that. The innate skill kicks in as well.
So you can zip and whoosh and shoosh and shoosh and shoosh all the way across that whole bit.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, it's a fantastic feeling. And
you're not going to do it the first time.
No, you're not. Shay, do me a video of that. I want to see how it's done.
But because Dave, sorry, that's not to contradict you, Dave, because there are absolutely like a lot of points where you do wait in this zone. But what I find, it is a zone I used to not really like very much because of that. I thought it was very stand around and wait. And then watch as the game just kind of like automatically pushes Sonic through these whizzing like corridors and swirly things and set pieces. But as I kind of got more used to it and as I got better at it, I found there is a lot of skill expression, which I find very satisfying.
I like the fact that there are enemies that are tiny blue mice that are like computer mice, and they're called Turbo Squeaks.
They are called Techno Squeaks.
Techno Squeaks.
Techno Squeaks.
The best badnik in all of Sonic. I'm so glad we've gotten to Techno Squeaks.
Yes, it is. Yeah, Techno Squeaks.
Look at him.
Yeah.
He's a little baby. He's a little lump. He's a computer mouse scurrying about on the ceiling.
Yeah, it's a computer mouse that is also a mouse.
With
like
big
a real
eyes.
Mouse. I mean, genius.
It's got a little bit of cable coming off it as a tail. He's got a couple of big eyes stuck on the front. And if you look in the... guys, if you look in the manual, in the European manual, because here, you know, we've got the EU, or we did, so you have to print multiple languages in the manual, right? So it's to see a page in English, you have to turn several pages and find the right paragraph. But that means you get to see what the badniks are called in other languages. And in, I don't know what language it's in, but this guy in another language, Spanish or something, is called Technopip. Oh, what a lovely little name for what a lovely little guy. That's what I've always called him, the Technopip.
Yeah, a cute name for a cute little guy.
Yes! He rules. I love him. Why don't we see more Techno Squeak? Why isn't
Techno Squeak should be in every single Sonic game and every single non-Sonic game as well.
Yes, yes.
They should make a computer mouse that is a Techno Squeak.
I would I would actually buy that.
I would buy that, absolutely, even if it was functionless.
Yeah.
Even though, from the user's perspective, it would just look like a normal mouse, because the eyes are kind of where the... No, they're not. They're on the other end. I was wrong.
Yeah, the tail would be the cord for the mouse or whatever.
Wait a minute. Yeah. But the buttons are on the eye end. So there's something wrong here.
No, it would be fake. No, there's buttons at the back. You just can't see them because it's 2D.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Guys pulled out of that one pretty well. It annoys me that Jax or whatever the company is who makes the toys, they're making these pretty cool Sonic toys. Mm. Like, you got Sonic, Robotnik, and, like, Silver Sonic, you know? But they're not making just, like, Badniks, like a pack of Badniks.
Oh,
like, I would love that.
Imagine a pack of Badniks. We used to have such things, you guys, like, back in the 90s.
We done a Buzz Bomb, we done a Bullhog, you know? We done a Techno Squeak. We done a Spike Bonker. The Spike Bonker.
Did you? The Spike Bonker.
I was waiting to get to the Spike Bonker.
Spike Bonker.
Spike Bonker.
The Spike Bonker.
The Spike Bonker.
I'm Alan Moore. And this is my Spike Bunker.
As he famously said that time. Did you, in the 90s, either of you, ever get those blind-bagged badniks?
No.
No, what?
They
yeah,
sound
guys.
Cool.
Yeah, dude, the blind-bagged badniks. They were, I mean, they weren't just badniks. They were like Sonic and Knuckles figures in general. So it was the first time that there was a little plastic figurine of Knuckles. There was a little metal Sonic in there. I didn't get that one.
Are you sure you haven't confused them with Go-Go's Crazy Bones?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yes, I'm thinking of... Because Go-Go's Crazy Bones did a Splats. This was the thing. They had a Splats. There was a toy Splats you could get from the newsagent in blind bags. It was amazing!
Splats
I just
the
wanna,
rabbit.
Like, I think that is the first time that Go-Go Crazy Bones did a Splats has ever been said in the history of the English language.
Well, that's the subtitle for the episode, then.
Moving on. Flying Battery. Other things that occur in Flying Battery. Now, as you've mentioned, Shay, I think it was you who mentioned this, the batteries, you know, the organic batteries in which Robotnik keeps the animals, are placed quite prevalently in this stage. Now, normally, the only time you've ever seen these things is at the end of a level.
What do you mean by organic batteries here? What are you referring to there?
The animals turn into like supposedly organic batteries to power the badniks, right?
What? Yeah. What?
Yeah, they stick electrodes in the like Quaker and their eyes and that, and that's how it works.
So when I hear organic battery being the term coming from Sonic the Comic, that's just the name for an animal in a badnik. What do you mean?
Okay, so you know the prisons that at the end of each stage.
Oh
is like
yeah, like the pods that have got them all in.
The capsules,
The capsules, yeah. And they have them in this game as well, but they're sometimes flying. Yeah, there are lots of those placed throughout the level.
There
of course,
are.
You're meant to think like, oh, these things are. If I jump on this, the level's over. And of course, you jump on it, and then a load of badniks erupt out of it, and you're like, oh shit. Another one, for example, you'll break, and loads of rings will come out of it, and it's just. I think it's another piece of excellent organic storytelling.
because they haven't had anything put in them yet.
I'd never thought of it like that.
Yeah, you have come to the place where these things are being made.
Oh, I never thought of this. I think you're
right. How cool is that?
I love that.
How cool is that? And then, of course, not to spoil it, but then, of course, you get to the end of the level. You jump on the thing, and it comes alive. It starts attacking you.
Yeah.
How much fun must they have had with that? What a fun thing. Okay, this is how you know a creative team are, like, firing in all cylinders. When they are able to just play that kind of little joke on you, you get to the end of the level, you see the capsule, you think, oh, yalde, a capsule. You jump on the top, and then it comes to life and starts trying to smack you while you're on its head. That's really funny.
Yeah.
And I don't notice it now because I've seen the joke so often, but it's a genuinely funny little gag.
That's it starting to be funny, and then it continues to be funny because wherever you stand on the screen, the thing punches you with a big arm. So you go, well, I know what I'll do, and you stand on his head, and you make him punch yourself in the head. It's brilliant.
Well, you fight it unlike anything else in the game, and it's organic. Yeah. Again, you figure that out organically. It's kind of obvious, isn't it?
Well, that's kind of cinematic, is it not?
Like, yes, it is, yeah.
Like, there is literally a bit in one of the Sonic cartoons where Sonic stands in front of Robotnik and, like, taunts and goes, nah, nah, and then, like, Robotnik tries to hit him and then punches himself in the face with the big robot. You know, and that's literally what you're doing here just through the game.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice that, you know, we're four games deep, or three games technically, and they're already going, like, let's make fun of the tropes. Let's subvert the something. You know, that's what we're doing here. And it's cute, and I like it a lot. I'm very fond of that boss fight. I mean, there are other things in Flying Battery worth talking about, I think. Other than the sort of association with, like, plenty of moving platforms and different types of moving platforms, there's also a thing with magnetism going on.
This is the source of a lot of the weighting that I don't like, but it's a cool idea, certainly.
I mean, for me, and I'm going to be completely honest with you, I just take the hit because I don't care. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you get hit in Sonic because that's why it's great.
That's always an option.
But standing around and waiting for these, you've got these magnets on the ceiling basically, and they'll turn on, and little metal spike balls will be attached to them that are on the floor. But also, bad nicks will be picked up by them.
Anything metal will rise to the ceiling because these magnets turn on, and that also includes Sonic if he has an electric shield.
Oh, you're joking!
What? I didn't know that.
I think. Am I thinking of the Death Egg?
I think you might. I don't know. I don't think that's true. But I think that the listener. I think you might be being anachronistic there. I think the listeners will.
figure
that out.
We could have subtly edited that out, but it ain't going to happen now.
No, it's not going to happen. No, Shay's rank stupidity will be exposed.
Well,
sorry, Shay,
hang on. Listen,
idiot.
I will accept the rank stupidity rap, but we need to decide whether or not I've actually been stupid in the first place, or whether or not history will vindicate me.
Well, the electric shield in the Death Egg lets you walk on the electric surfaces, obviously. I don't recall it ever making you rise up, though. However, that's a very cool idea, and I'd like it to be true.
Yeah.
I think with the flying battery, the thing is, I usually default to the fire shield because there are so many fire-based obstacles on that stage.
Yes.
I know there are lightning shields there, but I think normally I would just not pick them up. So this could well be true. I think what we should do is we should leave it because, you know, it's a game that's so good that people have almost sort of apocryphal ideas about it.
You were right about, tell you what, you were right about the thing where, you know, you go in the water and badniks in the water die if you've got a lightning shield.
Yeah.
That was right.
Yeah, which is wildly cool.
That is wildly cool, and it's very much along these lines.
Yeah. By the way, Shay, I just want to make it clear that you're not an idiot or rankly stupid at all. You're actually quite smart.
Stupid, buddy, I know. I know, it's a joke.
Well, some people don't understand my sense of humour, Shay. They think I'm just being mean, but I'm not. When I say horrible things, what I'm actually secretly saying is, I love you.
I'm going through the wiki and everything, trying to find any information about this.
It's a sticky wiki.
It is indeed. I'll tell you what I'm going to do.
What are you
going to do? I am going to boot up Sonic 3.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Do it.
I'll get the flying battery and see if I can...
Just...
You're getting this live, folks. We've got live Sonic 3
just
right now.
Just talk to us while you play it. I'm playing Sonic 3 right now as well.
Why are you guys playing Sonic 3 for? Are you guys playing Sonic 3? Especially doing a podcast. This is so unprofessional.
I'll tell you why I'm playing Sonic 3. It's because I didn't get through the Sandopolis zone before we started.
Ever in my life.
No, specifically before we started this record. So I'm just looking for any extra little details. Here's one. In the flying battery zone, what is with the fact that just randomly, and for one zone, they've decided to make the spikes kind of jiggle up and down like little machines?
Because it looked cool, I guess.
It does look cool. It's just really strange that they just did it for one level, and that was that.
It's a little, I mean, there are gimmicks in this stage that are revisited from previous stages. Like, there are the, I think that those sort of cylinder things are also in, I want to say Metropolis, or am I completely wrong about that?
Oh, the twisty, roundy, corkscrew things. Yes, I think they are as well. I can't, because I can't remember Sonic 2 as well as I can this, I'm second guessing myself, but I'm pretty sure that a version of it is in there.
The thing with Sonic 2, Sonic 2 is, bless Sonic 2, you know, it's obviously a great game, but the levels just don't have the character that this game's levels have to
me.
They don't stick in the mics. They haven't got the set pieces, you know, they haven't got the character. But the blind battery does have character, and that's quite remarkable because it could quite easily be forgettable. It's just an air quotes another base, like another launch base. You know, it's very, very similar to that level. It kind of moving, sort of speaking about Act Two a bit, because there's a lot of gimmicks we haven't talked about, but we'll get to them.
Yeah.
Act Two kind of piles on the sort of homage because the boss begins with a sequence that's rather similar to Wing Fortress Zone, where you're locked in between two lasers and a giant laser beam on the ceiling is firing at you. And all you have to do is dodge it. And if you dodge it for long enough, for some reason, Robotnik's controls explode. Then you chase him through the ship.
Sure about
that. And he fights you with what has to be the least practical of all of his robots ever.
Yeah, it looks like fun for him, though.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he's having a blast, and that's great. And it would be remiss of me at this point if I didn't point out the error in this part of the game, where when you're playing as Knuckles at this point, you will be fighting Robotnik. I think we talked about this, actually.
I think we did before.
Yes.
Yeah. But no, getting off the boss and going back to the main zone, I mean, I guess the thing with Flying Battery is it's just good. I believe this was the first time in any Sonic game that Sonic did any kind of hand-over-hand climbing like this as well. There are things you can cling to in, like, Wing Fortress, but you can't then climb across them hand-over-hand. You have to jump, I think.
Okay,
That's
so these
cool,
are these are some kind of hanging things from the ceiling that are, like, climbing...
Yeah.
Not rings, but, like, square rings.
Monkey bars.
Monkey bars, pretty much, yeah.
Okay, and yeah, so Sonic does climb over them, and then some of them go down and take you down to lower down levels and stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's just another way of traversing that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the first few times you play it, you sort of think, oh, sweet, I've got to like guess which one is the one that will take me there. And it's not actually. It's
usually not the one that's over some spikes.
You just kind of carry on until you're taken down. But still, it has that feel to it. And
there's some really interesting, like, Flying Battery has those things which are like these kind of, they're kind of springs, but they're also fire launchers.
Yes.
Like they spurt fire at you, but when you jump on them, they become a spring.
Well, it's like a sort of nozzle that's got flamethrowers spinning around, just like a little turret, little round turret.
Yeah.
But then when you go on it, I always interpreted it as like, because when you go on it, you kind of push the top down. So it's like too much pressure builds up and it springs up. Because
I was going to say exactly the same thing. Like, it's because it's pushed down, the fire's still going, it's building up, and then it pops back up.
And then it bursts you up. Yeah, that makes sense. But of course, it's another sort of. It's almost like I always see it as almost like a training thing, because quite soon after that, you get a fire shield. And in Sonic 3, there really aren't as many instances of the fire shield just letting you walk in fire.
Yeah.
But in this game, based on, like, you know, the Lava Reef Zone that's coming up, there's a lot of fire in it, and it's nice to have that kind of reinforcement of, like, yes, if you have this shield, this thing ain't a problem.
Yeah.
You can just stand in it.
You can stand right there as it whirls round flamethrowing at you, and you're just like, I don't care, I got this.
There's another example of the game not being afraid to, like, just trust you, you know? They never just kind of stop the game and go, do this, do that. It's just the game completely trusts you to find your own
Well, there's so much to discover.
Yes.
And like
W.H. Smith.
There are so many cool set pieces in this level. Like, if you take like the highest route, which is fairly difficult to do, as regular Sonic, it's kind of, if you take like the highest route, you end up on this little set piece thing where Robotnik launches missiles at you and and then they destroy the roof.
Yeah.
And then you go in and then there's like little ramps with the swinging balls going around them. And there's a lightning shield right before it. You collect the lightning shield. And if you can maneuver between the swinging balls well enough, you go up and you get rings galore and they all get attracted to you. It's really cool.
That's right. And if you play enough Sonic and Knuckles, everyone does get attracted to you.
That's the opposite of what's true.
I got married off the back of it.
I was here.
I mean, one time I went in and I said, well, I got 500,000 points before at Marble Garden Act 2. And let me tell you,
the clothes came off.
She just turned to me, looked me square in the eye, and says, she said, right, you pointed to the bedroom door, get me sorted out pronto.
The thing is, I have to admit that a rather disturbing amount of my love life has kind of orbited around Sonic the Hedgehog.
I mean, it would sort of have to, wouldn't it? What else is there to us?
I can't deny that that's true. I can't deny that that's true, and I feel slightly ashamed of it, but at the same time, you know.
But it's not as if we're going to be getting off with Mario people, is it?
Oh, Jesus, God, no. Imagine, yuck.
Bleh.
P.U.
The thing that we haven't talked, there's also these like weird like carnival slides, Flying Battery that I love. But the thing we haven't talked about that I think is this zone's major thing is the number of really high speed, set pieces. That's just you whizzing around loops and
picked up by those balls and swung around as well.
Yes,
yeah, which is awesome.
And rolling cages. Okay, I can confirm I was a wrong idiot. Stu was right to chastise me. The magnet doesn't work. It would have been cool. Okay. It does work in the Death Egg Zone.
It does.
It doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay.
Doesn't
tune
it?
In next episode where I'm going to be a wrong idiot again.
Oh, I'm going to be a wrong idiot as well. I thought it did in the Death Egg Zone.
We're all wrong idiots all the time.
But it's like, there are like rolling cages and there are like loop the loops and little kind of like trolleys that like jettison you forward. Yeah. You zoom around at top speed.
There's no end of stuff. And it's all completely like in a piece with the level. The thing about this whole game or two games is that all of these different things that we're describing in every zone, it somehow doesn't feel like, oh, now this or what now. No, it's like, oh, what now? What's going to be in this place? And it's
We haven't talked about the bit where you go up onto the sort of chassis on the surface. You climb up those poles with the spinning blades on them.
With like the fan.
And if you are clever, you can go backwards across them and do a really dangerous zigzag over the blades and get an extra life.
Yep.
And it's awesome, and I always get that one up.
Okay, whenever we mention something, I sort of want to explain it for any listener who doesn't know. These are like tall poles, and when you pass them, Sonic latches on, and now he's spinning around like an acrobat from his hands, like in a big wide arc with his feet pointing right out, spinning around like the whirling blades that are at the top of them. They're just like tall fans.
The propellers.
Propellers, that's the word. That is the word. Yeah. Not like spinny helicopter fans, propellers. And you have to, because at first, when you're first playing this, you're like, oh, what do I do? And you press a button and it kind of flings him off to the side. But then if you're clever, you work out that you can hold a directional button and affect which way you go. So yes.
Well, I mean, I want to add real quick that you say if you're clever, but there is actually no other way to progress. So you will figure that out.
Oh, right.
It's just another piece of quite good game design.
Then I guess what I mean is you can figure out that you can go left, which
I'm not like contradicting what you're saying. I just want to add that kind of like.
Correctly.
Okay.
But there's also a bit, and this bit has eluded me for years. I know for a fact it exists.
Okay.
I believe it's in Act 2, but if you take a particular route, there's like these magnetic balls, and you run onto them very smoothly from the ground. So your momentum carries forward.
Yeah.
They're pendulums. That's what they are.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So you run onto the pendulum.
Yeah, yeah.
And it swings round. And it's like there's like three half pipes and then three pendulums all in a row. Mm. I can't find that bit again for the life of me. I know it exists.
It does.
Well, that's
I was
interesting,
there today.
The route that I always take, I always see those.
These are those balls that Stuart was mentioning earlier.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. Yeah, yeah.
It's so cool.
As you while you're in the half pipe, listeners, Sonic goes down and then up, and then normally he would just be flung up into the air. But in this particular case, there happens to be a metal ball that, for reasons unexplained, he sticks to, which is on the end of. Think of a chain chomp. It's on the end of a chain, and as it goes up and round with his momentum, it just delivers him perfectly into the next.
It's so good.
And then
it's
it happens
so
again. So your movement is describing this completely smooth waveform up and down and up and down. And it's so fast. It's so good and it feels so good.
It is buttery smooth.
That buttery biscuit.
It's buttery smooth. That was good. I don't accept that was bad. That was good.
It was.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Retronauts.
No. I mean, what else is there to say about Flying Battery? We've kind of rinsed it, I think. It's a really very good zone that shouldn't be this good.
We should mention it's got one of those, you have to get up to the top before the lava does bits, but with just stuff.
Right at the end.
Right at the end. That's how the whole zone ends, with one of those. The floor is rising in a way which doesn't actually make any physical sense. It's just a line.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
It's just a line that's going up through the stage.
Yeah.
But it means
When I was younger, I found that part quite difficult and demanding. It's probably the trickiest of those bits in this game, I'd say. I think it's the last one as well.
I think it is.
Oh, no, it's not.
No,
because
it's not
the sand bit in Sandopolis.
No, but it is one of the trickiest ones.
It is quite tricky.
That takes you all the way. You're going to get squashed if the floor, crushes you between any ceiling and itself. So you have to keep going up, 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 through every little pipe and way that you possibly can, until eventually you get out to the roof, and then it keeps going. So now you're being lifted up on this floor, and that then becomes the pole onto which, as we've previously mentioned, a sort of monkey?
Egomatic?
Really bizarre. It's an Egomatic with big arms, a little bit like at the end of Sonic 3. In fact, might be the same. And it
maybe.
And it grabs onto this thing and swings around it. So Robotnik is swinging around in a big arc around this thing, holding onto this pole.
I know it's a game, but it's an unbelievably impractical boss fight.
Yeah, but imagine having one of them. Think of the things you could swing on. I'd love to have one of them.
Imagine if the poor fucker had like a fry up before he did this.
That's why he's got that weird face on. Because it's the only, for some reason, there's a unique. This is probably why in the Knuckles version of the level it accidentally becomes Robotnik when it should actually be an egg robo that he fights every time. Because they've drawn a bespoke sprite for Robotnik here.
It looks a bit like he's looking down, like there's a bucket there or something.
He looks a little bit poorly. Yeah.
He just occasionally gobs into it.
Yeah.
Okay, this is getting very visceral.
Yeah, but the worst part is when he throws up, it's just all eggs.
All eggs, yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing but egg.
He's never done a shit in his life.
Well,
he's just been egg-bound since, the day he transformed.
I mean, but...
That's why he's so angry all the time.
Yeah. That's why he's so round and getting bigger.
Yeah, he's just full of poos.
I was going to say eggs, but okay. At least we got. It's nice to know that we got to poos at some point.
Yeah, it's nice that we've come around to the subject once again.
Yeah, you've got to get that out of the way, if anything.
Of human feces.
You know, you do need to get your poos out of the way.
You have to get them out.
It's bad to hold them in.
And he has a flamethrower jet thing on his head, and you have to hit him at very specific times, and that's that boss.
And it's a little bit awkward because he's got spiky hands as well. It's one of the bosses that's actually probably one of the easiest ones to get hit by.
Yeah, it's kind of a tricky boss. It doesn't do much.
And despite being really awkward, it still pales in comparison to the sheer awkwardness of the Sonic Mania version of this boss, which is awful.
I don't remember it right in this moment.
Oh, it's a big spider that you have to hit into the spikes on the side of the level.
What makes you say that's a version of this?
But the hit boss, well, it's the Flying Battery boss.
Oh, is it? Oh, beg pardon.
Yeah, and it's got this hitbox that's just awkward and dodgy, and it's like, why couldn't you just hit the damn thing with your body like all Sonic bosses? But they were like, no, we want to be clever and smart.
Oh, they're from the place in the world where they want to be clever and
Baba
smart.
Baba Louie from Quick Draw McGraw.
I don't know why that voice was that I just did. I have absolutely no idea. It'd be quite funny if Babalu was part of like headcanon or like, you know, Christian Wyatt Studios.
The
reason there's not been a sequel is because El Capone came and just like beat the shit out of everyone.
He's actually now an indicted criminal in a Japanese jail. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that's the flying battery done and dusted, I would have to say.
Yeah.
And we can move on to the next zone.
What happens at the end of it? How does the level actually like end and get you into the next one?
I think you just jump off, don't you?
Yeah, he runs out and he kind of like... Yeah. He does... Oh, God, see, this is the problem. I can't remember if this is something that the ROM hacks have added. But he just... If I remember correctly, he just runs through and bursts out the end. Like, he kind of like bursts out a metal door at the end and just falls down.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's it.
And then he, because originally that door was meant to be the skate,
that's right.
The snowboard,
the
right?
The snowboard, yeah. And so it actually kind of spins around and looks like he's about to snowboard on it. That's right.
But what actually happens is he beefs it and he lands in Sandopolis.
Silly.
And you go into the sand and then you got to press jump to jump out the sand like in Ice Cap, right?
I think so.
Yeah, you go like into the sand and you're under the sand.
I think so. I mean, I could be thinking.
Then you press jump and you pop
cap,
out of the sand.
Yeah.
You know, this is actually true. Once I was playing this on the Mega Drive, I went into the sand, and then the game crashed. It was still running, but I couldn't get out of the sand, so it was just like, Sonic's dead now. And I looked in the manual, and it's like, yeah, it's one of Robotnik's deadly traps.
Yeah.
Did we ever discuss that?
I think we may have brought it up initially, yeah, but we might as well review. It's like, in the manual it says that sometimes Robotnik's like devious traps mean Sonic gets stuck in a position where he can't continue. And you'll have no choice but to reset. And I think that is the most brilliant justification for, like, cute missed QA. I'm not saying poor programming, because there always are glitches. Everyone misses glitches.
Yeah,
it's not possible.
It's a remarkably solid game, this
one,
I think.
It's just a very, very funny way to say, like, this game's the size of a tank. We can't check everything.
Well, what I like about that is that it doesn't that kind of... You're a kid, right? You don't know what bugs
are.
I am a small child,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. That's precisely what I meant. You don't know
Gaga.
You don't know reality. You know, you don't know about game programming. You don't know about taxes. Yeah. And so you're reading the manual. This happens to you, right? Mm. And so there are two options. You know, either you're sitting there like, I don't know what's happened. I broke my game. Or the game developers have kind of like, not the game developers, but the manual, whoever wrote the manual, has shifted the blame slightly. So now, like, you're no longer confused about what's happening. Now you're thinking to yourself, oh, that Dr. Robotnik, I'll get him this time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, I'm not saying, even I'm not Sonic 3-pilled enough to say that, like, it's good that it has bugs.
Sonic 3-pilled?
I feel like they handled it well enough.
It's got bugs, all right. In Hydro City, those fly bugs that come after you. But Sandopolis, I would say, is one of the least liked zones in the community.
This is everyone's favourite, isn't it? Yeah, exactly.
It's very disliked, and I kind of don't know why, because it's awesome.
I do, because it was definitely my least favourite back in the day. But, yeah, these days I'm quite fond of it again.
I mean, I'll say this, Act 1 pales in comparison to the majesty that is Act 2. Because Act 2, for me, is one of my single favourite levels in the game.
The thing is, for me, with Sandopolis, this is the closest I get to disliking a Sonic 3 and Knuckles level.
Oh, this is going to be a hell of an episode. Holy shit.
This is, this is the one.
I think I agree.
But even then, again, this is me absolutely being Sonic 3-pilled again.
Yeah.
Stop saying that.
Okay. the reason... I'm not sure. If you gave me the option, I don't think I would change anything. Because the reason that this is kind of slower and more kind of meandering is because it's characterful. You know, it's an ancient Egyptian pyramid.
Yeah. And you are fully exploring the tomb. It is a proper labyrinth. Yeah. And it feels good in that way. It feels spooky. It feels imposing. Yeah, it's actually really good.
You've got the tricks and the traps and the booby traps and the mummy, booby traps and literally like a ghostly curse and everything.
Yeah.
I actually do understand not liking it, perhaps. For me, it's the absolute perfect combination of like vibes, atmosphere, and gameplay. This level pushes back harder than any so far, I would say.
That's true.
Act 2 of Sandopolis is legit quite tricky.
Okay, so Act 2 is what we've been talking about. Act 1 isn't in the pyramid.
No.
It's just in the desert leading up to it.
Act 1 I can understand not liking because it's quite unremarkable.
It's a desert zone. It's got some interesting stuff. It's got loops that you go through more than once, which is interesting. Like, you don't just go through the loop and zoom off. You're like, wee, 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 and zoom off. It's
you sound French.
All the way home.
I'll tell you what it's got. It's got quicksand. And at first, you think, oh no, level full of quicksand. Oh, I'm going to drown in all this quicksand. But then how elite you feel the first time you realize there are patches of quicksand and whole quicksand waterfalls as well that aren't deaths, but that lead down to hidden chambers.
Yes.
It's dead good. Oh, and then one of the coolest things like about how Sonic 3 and Knuckles works in general, this one thing kind of describes a lot of the game, but is that you can find something like that, a quicksand waterfall that you are sure this time is actually a death one because you're already several layers down into secret turned out to be a way down ones. This one surely will definitely kill you, but you try it just in case and you fall and you fall. And not only do you land somewhere safely, but there's evidence you could have got here by another route as well. Because leading up to it, there's like a sort of a slope that's got steps up it that you could have come up. Every place has different routes to it. It's amazing.
Shay, what were you saying, Shay?
Dave, that story you just told there about sliding down the sand and uncovering a hidden chamber, my eyes are watering. I got so excited at that. That is so cool. That's such a cool way to describe it.
Well, this is the thing about this level is I don't think it plays to the strengths of Sonic the Hedgehog.
No, it doesn't.
I do find this is the stage when I think back, this specific single stage, Sandopolis Act 1. Yeah. I have rinsed Sonic 3 and Knuckles' arsehole to breakfast for years. Like, I've done everything. I've specifically gone out of my way to explore every level. And Sandopolis Act 1, I am 100% convinced there's a bunch of stuff I've never seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are so many routes through this level and so many weird different ways you can go. Like, even to the point, like, the bits where you're abseiling down by pressing C, you can just not do that.
Yeah.
You can just jump
down. You can just fall down and you might end up somewhere completely
different. And you're probably
fine.
Okay, there's a couple of things I want to say about that for the listeners, right?
Yeah.
There are these bits where you're standing at the top of a big, deep trench and there's a little handhold thing to clasp onto. Now, you've had a load of these in this game and they're usually rope slides that take you down to the next bit. What happens here is it just starts going down and Sonic will, with new animation, put his feet up against the wall and like kick when you press the button, he'll kick himself off.
And you spin around in a cool way.
Yeah, you kind of like twizzle around in the air as the rope takes you across. And
sometimes you go to the same wall, but sometimes you'll spin around a loop and go to the parallel wall.
I think that they should have done it in the opposite order. Like the way that I usually experience it is that the cool spinny roundy one comes first and the actually doesn't feel very good simply rappelling down a wall one comes second. Should have been the other way around.
True.
But what both do, as well as all that, when you finish being excited about that new thing, you then get to the bottom And on each occasion, the wall that you've been abseiling down becomes the ceiling of a little chamber. And at that point, you discover that the line that you are going down on is a physics object. Because as it hits that corner, it kind of pivots and you start to swing back and forth. So now the rope is like straight down and you're swinging on this. And then you decide when to jump off. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's so immersive. Everything in this game is like... It's a bit, honestly, Breath of the Wildy, where it's like, oh, I bet this would do this. It does.
I mean, the thing that this says to me about Sonic 3 and Knuckles, and this is like the worst level in the game, and we are praising it to the high heavens here. We're sitting here like gushing about it. We're weeping about it.
Yeah. This is what I mean when I say this is the closest I get to disliking a Sonic 3 level, because mechanically, it's very start-stop. It's very kind of like trudging. Yeah. It doesn't play in a vacuum. It doesn't play to the strengths of Sonic 3's mechanics.
I completely agree with that.
There's a lot of start stop. There's a lot of like mashing A to jump up sand waterfalls.
Yeah,
which is so cool, by the way. Cool idea.
Yeah.
But here is the thing. Like what I find so impressive, even about Act 1, is its dedication to, again, creating a different mood and a different character to the level. Because just like with Ice Cap, which doesn't have any ice physics, this doesn't really have, besides the quicksand, it doesn't have any sand physics that would slow you down.
Quick interjection, the quicksand is essentially just the oil from Oil Ocean Sonic 2. Yes. In terms of speed, because when you jump out of it, you're out of it. You don't have to hammer the button to get out of it or anything. Because they knew that would be bollocks.
But looking
at you, Super Mario Bros. 3.
It is through exclusively the level design and the obstacles that they create the impression of you trudging through this desert and going on little, like, Indiana Jones-style archaeology stunts, like abseiling down a big, like... a big ancient stone pillar and stuff like that. And so, like, even if it doesn't 100% play to the strength of Sonic 3's mechanics, it is completely itself, completely unique, a completely new tone and style for the game to adopt. And isn't, like, again, I wouldn't change a thing about that, because isn't that 100 times more exciting than just... do another loop. Here's Flying Battery again. There's loads of, like, loop-de-loops and stuff.
I want to say, like, what you say about the Indiana Jones thing is spot on, but the game, I think, also does play with older Sonic games again a little bit. Like, the bit where you go on the sand sort of slide that loops forever.
Oh, yes.
Which is another way of demonstrating this kind of, you are lost in the desert.
I remember having to phone my friend to ask how to get out of that.
But when the way you jump, the way you get out of that is not dissimilar to the way you get out of the similar trap in Labyrinth Zone. You jump across. It's very streamlined compared to that. But I think what it does is it's kind of playing on both the Labyrinth Zone, but also kind of playing on Ice Cap. It's like the opposite. Yes. It's like, you've done Ice Cap, now you're doing, like, Sand Cap.
Yeah. Listeners, what it is that there are diagonal crossing slides, and you jump across to the other one.
Also, it's adding to that thing of, like, You're in the desert. You're lost. You might be seeing things. You know, it's just marvelous. And does it create the most playable level in the game? I would say no. But is it still fucking good? Yes. Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's just Act 1. And I like Act 2 10 times more.
There's one thing remaining that we haven't mentioned, which I think actually has quite a big hand in this being a level that is not people's favourite.
If this is what I think it is, I agree with you.
Very oppressive, gloomy, Shay. Okay.
Before we get to that, I do just want to drive home.
Uh-huh. How are you going to do a podcast if you drive home? Like, sorry.
Stew, you rascal.
Yeah.
So, like, again, it's one of those, like, you're sliding uncontrollably down these, like, sand flumes.
Yes.
Doesn't feel good. Doesn't feel good.
And it's uncontrollable, and it starts looping.
Yeah.
And...
Yes.
And the thing is, again, that makes no physical sense. How does that work? But you're in kind of a weird, like, liminal space here. You're in this great big ancient urine. Ken, I'm just going to leave. You took it to the rest of the podcast. So,
Dave, I've warned you about constantly saying urine over and over again. Specifically said not to do that.
You are in this giant ancient tomb, this ancient pyramid. Things are a bit spooky. Things are a bit strange and supernatural. And, like, you know, there's mirages or maybe mummy's curses come to mind. And that is, again, driven home by Dave.
Well, actually... I don't think I was going to say what you're thinking of.
Oh, shit.
I was going to say the flipping music. It's oppressive. Oh. It's thick and sticky, and it's not very catchy, and it's...
Not very catchy. I beg to differ.
Well, all right, but not like...
Da, da, da.
All right, yeah. Da, 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 da. But not like a Sonic 2.
It's great.
It's all right. But it's like, you know, like in the Mario desert levels, the music is kind of annoying in those. It's like, for some reason, desert levels always have annoying music because it's... emphasizing how tricky it is and how hot it is and how you're going to get sucked down. Okay, so...
You're going to get sweaty.
But yes, it's much more interesting to talk about what happens in Act 2.
No, because we haven't talked about... I'm going to bring it home, Shay, what you were saying. This level ends with what I personally consider the low point of the entire game. You stand there for like what feels like a full minute... While this pyramid rises out of the sand. Yeah. Now, the pyramid rising is very cool, but it takes a very long time. Then the boss comes out, and it's this big rock monster.
I'd completely forgotten. Yes.
And it's the shittest thing in the game.
It might be.
Because, now, the first time you fight this, blind, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
You're hitting it, and you can hit it backwards into the sand. Because the way you destroy it is you knock it into the sand pits on either side of the level, right?
Again, kind of... Mummy's Curse, like ancient, unstoppable, mystical force.
Watching the actual pyramid come up and a door opening it and, like, this guy come out is really cool.
It's really cool the first time you do it.
He's rock golem is what he is. He's a big rock golem.
You need to think with your brain rather than brute force. You know, you need to think how to appease this ancient thing, which is to drown him in sand.
Yeah, the problem is Sonic bosses are meant to be breezy to me.
Right.
And this one, the only thing you do, once you've done it once, is you go to the left, you stand in the sand, and you simply wait for it to die.
You wait for him to jump
towards you. It's the most efficient way to destroy it. You're in no risk of getting hit by anything.
He does big monkey jumps towards you a step at a time, and you just let him jump over you and drown in the sand behind your head.
Yeah. And as a result, on replay, it's the worst thing in the game for me, because it really is just waiting. That's not necessarily fair to the game, but it is the part of the game that is the least good. That doesn't mean it's bad.
Does it make up for
it? Because it's only about 30 seconds long.
Does it make up for it by being quite funny?
This ties into what I was saying, right? Is it's like, mechanically, it's not exactly the most exciting level. It doesn't take the best advantage of Sonic's strengths. And it foregoes that all in favour of character, and the boss is the exact same thing. And like you say, Stu, the first time through, you're on a blind playthrough, it's a really cool and worthwhile experience because you are, like, you're puzzling it out. You're thinking, okay, so how do you actually deal with this thing?
Yeah.
But on repeat playthroughs, it's just like exactly like you say, there is a dominant strategy. It's just to stand all the way to the left and wait.
Would you like to hear how I would have designed this boss if it was me?
Okay.
Would you like to know that?
Okay.
I would have had the same way of destroying it, like getting it into the sand, but I would have had it be smart enough that it just, if you're in the sand, it will not jump in there.
Right.
My idea is, and this is probably not great, it's still better, I think. When you hit the boss, you know, it collapses and it's just its head. At that point, the rock becomes one of those pushable rocks.
Oh!
So you break its head and you push it across.
Yeah.
But after a while, it will start blinking, at which point you move away from it. Then it will reform. You hit it again, and then you push it some more.
Yeah.
Still a bit boring, but at least you're doing something.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting.
That's how I would do it, personally.
The way that I would do it is I would literally just make it Crocomire from Super Metroid.
Okay. Yeah. So you just keep hitting it backwards until it falls into some sand and then it comes out as a big Skellington. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I would just replace Sonic with Samus Aran. I would just make the whole thing Super Metroid instead.
Yeah, the whole game is just Super Metroid now. Okay. So after that boss, which is a bit of a downer on a replay, but only we're talking 30 seconds here, you know, it's fine. One of my favorite things in the entire game happens, and I really want to talk about it, okay?
Yeah, what's that?
The transition between Act 1 and Act 2 is the coolest shit ever. You stand in front of the door, it opens with this awesome Mega Drive noise, which is like, like that.
Yeah.
The screen like fades to black with open. Only Sonic standing there.
Yep.
The level comes back and the music goes, it comes in really bassy and hard. And it's the awesomely oppressive second act theme. It is brutally oppressive.
Although this does lead me to the only thing that really annoys me about the level is that the way the music goes is, and then you got these trumpets, like that. And I always want to rev up to the tune of those, but you can't because Tails mucks it up, so it's just like rubbish.
Sorry, this whole part, the whole Sandopolis bit, has just been absolute negative chemistry between the three of us. We've just been bouncing back and forth.
I know.
But just to pick up on something about that boss there, the Sand Guardian, you can actually bump it. You can actually hit it.
You can knock it back and kill it that
you
way.
You can knock it back, but it's literally slower than just letting it come to you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's
literally slower than just standing in place.
It's a puzzle boss that isn't really considered for replays, but then again, the fact that you can kill it in 30 seconds by just waiting kind of does feel like they considered it for replays, you know?
Oh, that's how you speedrun it, is by doing nothing.
Yeah. I bet there's some way to, like, gimmick it so it, like, immediately dies. I bet there is some glitch that I don't know about that immediately kills it. But no, Act 2 is, for me, a genuine highlight of this game. I absolutely love Act 2. I get why people don't, because people don't like time pressure. And not only is this level long enough that you could easily get to 10 minutes and die, you're also constantly being hassled by geists.
Here they are. This is what I thought we were talking about before. Let's talk about these guys.
This is a really lovely and really cruel little trick. I love how the game sets this up.
Yeah. It's great, yeah.
You're doing all these kind of like tricky platforming with pushing blocks. Like, for example, you've got to push a switch all the way and then it starts slowly ticking back, which makes a door slowly close. More time pressure. And then you kind of carry on and then you get to loop the loop and you're like, Yaldi, cracking. Can't wait, mate. Love loop the loops. You go round the loop, you go up, you think, where are we going now? You immediately get hit by a spring. It's like swatted straight back down onto the top of one of Robotnik's capsules. We've just established in the flying battery that the capsules contain sometimes things you might not want, and it's completely unavoidable.
Yeah.
You release the ghosts, like the vengeful spirits of this pyramid, who now harass you for the rest of the level.
I never thought of this before, but that means that Robotnik has got ghost-busting equipment. He's somehow stored those ghosts in that thing.
But hey, listen, we don't know what they're the ghosts of. Maybe they are some animals that died that Sonic didn't rescue.
Oh, they're animals that were just in that
and they hate
for too
Sonic.
Long.
They're furious at Sonic because he didn't rescue them in time.
So tell them about the way the ghosts work, because it's amazing.
Well, the way that the ghosts work is, ghosts, because it's inherently funny to me. it is inherently funny to me.
Is that what they're called, ghosts?
They're called ghosts, but I call every ghost a geist because it's funny. It's like saying skeleton instead of skeleton.
Fair enough.
Now, the way the ghosts work
at least
is
he's
they
not
will...
calling them ghosts every time.
Yeah, but when Sonic lands on the thing, he kind of does go, yikes!
Zoinks!
Ghosts! And then he jumps up and his little legs go around really fast and it goes like, you know. Anyway, no. The way the ghosts work is there are three of them and they hover around you, and at first they are kind of small, cute ghosts, right? Then as time wears on, the level gets darker and the ghosts get bigger.
Yeah.
Now, and they can't actually hurt you. As the lights get darker over time, no, they can't hurt you at first. But once time's gone on long enough and it's more or less pitch black, as represented by dark purple, the ghosts suddenly have little devil horns and they have little spike arms.
Little claws.
And they look pissed.
And now they can
and
hurt
every
you.
So often they will swoop at you. Now, if you're in the air, if you're in a ball, they won't hurt you.
Oh, really?
But they are constantly swooping at you, and they can and will hit you. The only way to stop this is you have to find light switches in the level, which you then... They're like hooks that you jump onto.
Yeah.
Pull them down, the lights go back up, the boost goes small again. But once you jump off that light switch, the time pressure returns. Now, the whole level...
As in, the light starts going dark
the
again.
The whole stage is built on time pressure. Not only are those that you've got the ghosts, you've got your own time limit... There's a bunch of those switches which open doors that are very, very limited in how long they're open for. And best of all, there's the bits where sand is pouring up from below.
Yeah.
And it will kill you. It's bloody hard.
Yeah.
It's
And it tempts you with power-ups as well.
What you have to do is that you're stuck in these long vertical corridors that you have no way of getting up. And so you have to smash these little corks in the ceiling, which releases the sand, and the sand slowly fills the room. So you've got to navigate through this vertical maze as you're slowly being raised up.
Mm-hmm.
Often while you have to push switches to open doors.
Yep.
Ghosts are chasing.
And also, running through quite thin corridors with bumps in them, with knowing that as soon as that sand hits, you're basically going to die.
Yeah.
This level is, the gloves come off. Like, this is the first hard level in this game.
Mm.
And even to this day, it's tricky, I think. And I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that they made a level like this. I love the ghosts. I love everything about it.
It is fun. It's perfect a lot more level. Fun than I thought. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of those where you think of it as horror and then you play
the
it.
The thing is, if you're calm and collected, the ghosts really aren't a problem. There are plenty of light switches. But the problem is, you're in panic mode most of this level. Because you're getting fucked with each way, and it's great.
But do you know what? Do you know what absolutely fascinates me about this level, by the way?
It is
the absolute expertise. They took advantage of everything at their disposal to make the game like this, to make this as stressful and as challenging and as frustrating as possible.
Mm.
Because what you'll notice, if you look at the full level map, is that enormous corridor ascension sequence. That enormous ascension sequence as you're rising up with the sand, you actually start at the top of the level and loop all the way around so that the level loops vertically, and that's how they do that trick earlier with the flumes that we were describing. But they do it the other way around as well, so that you loop your way around so they could create more vertical space for this sequence to be as tense and as kind of stressful as possible, to kind of pull the tension taut.
Yeah.
You know, because if they just used the available space, it would have just kind of been over too quickly.
Yeah.
And I think that's genius. I think that's so clever. That is you can tell that these guys knew exactly what they were doing with the Mega Drive's technology, because while you're in it, if you're looking at the full map, it's obvious what they're doing. But while you're in there, of course, you have no idea where your Y coordinate is.
No.
On the entire map.
It's like a Disneyland ride. It's like the stretching room in the Ghost Mansion or whatever. It plays on you not knowing where in physical space you are.
I mean, something that we talked about, I love the fact that the rising sand bit baits you with power-ups. that makes me very happy.
Oh yeah, it baits you to go into, you know, almost
dangerous spaces to get
chambers,
to try and get power-ups. Yeah, there's a one-up that's nightmarishly hard to get.
There's like one that's just a rings, but you still fancy going in there, and then you just get crushed.
Yeah, there's a ring, a super ring, and a power sneakers, which at this point is basically you need it.
Okay, again. So your greed is being punished in this ancient Egyptian tomb.
Yeah, there
you
go. Wow. Oh my God.
Okay,
guys and listeners, I'm genuinely delighted because there was one level in Sonic 3 that I wasn't that keen on, and I'm coming out of this podcast absolutely adoring it. Are you joking? That is minted.
Well, this is why we're doing this. This is what this is for.
This is one of the best games ever made. It is.
Yeah. I mean,
I will fight you everywhere.
Well, I mean, it's an ingenious game, and it uses everything that in its disposal to create organic storytelling. And, you know, that's real shit. Like, that's not us imprinting ideas on it. Like, that's what
literally
it is.
The only downside to it is it made Sonic fans think that storylines would be a good thing in Sonic games.
The only downside to it is it made Sonic fans think that the future Sonic games would be good. And unfortunately, they weren't.
Oh, dear.
Sonic 3 and Knuckles is the peak of the series. I don't see how that's arguable.
No, that's definitely true, and it's one of the best games ever made.
I mean, I love Sonic CD to death, but below this.
There's one thing we have. Go on, Shay.
I don't know. After a game of this caliber, I think like a 25-year refractory period could be forgiven.
There's one thing we haven't mentioned about the Sandopolis Zone, which is that those blocks that you have to push and then they go on a little track and you stand on them.
Oh,
and ride
I love
along,
that. Yeah,
that
yeah.
Have got a little grumpy face on that looks like one of my teachers. Aren't they lovely?
My word!
You know the one. You know the little grumpy face?
No, I don't know the one. I'm not familiar with your teachers, mate.
No, not the teacher. The grumpy face.
I know the one you mean, yeah. I do know the grumpy face you mean, yeah. I mean, the thing about this world is, one thing I could say about this level, which does make some kind of sense to me, is it's very lacking in badniks.
Suppose.
Because, let's face it, why would there be badniks there? Why would they be there? Why would this whole level is almost entirely based around traps and platforming.
Oh, do you know, okay, headcanon. Robotnik went here, started filling it up with robots, got haunted by some ghosts, spent all of the rest of the time that he had figuring out how to trap them, and then legged it.
Yeah. That's what I take from it. Like, genuinely.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end, when you fight Robotnik in this stage, it is in a sort of maybe slightly disappointingly forgettable, maybe, I would say, compared to the rest of the level. It feels like a gimmick in search of an idea that's fun, really.
A little
bit. At least you can kill it really quickly, you know? But the actual stage, like, as I've said, I've never understood its negative perception because I think it's one of the best stages in the game.
I'm starting to think
it delivers. It delivers on every level. It's wonderful.
I did not expect to be coming out of this episode saying, yeah, man, maybe. I'm so delighted. Like, we're about to get to what I think is the best level in we'll get that to that in a minute, but like, I'm so impressed because that's clearly what it is going for.
Yeah.
And just, oh man, that's beautiful. What a beautiful little game this is.
It really is. It is a game of sheer beauty. Now, are we done with Sandopolis? Have we rinsed that? We've talked about Sandopolis a lot.
I don't think you've really mentioned what the boss is.
What is the boss? You know, it's a sort of statue thing that Robotnik's hiding in.
Yeah, it's like an ancient statue built into the wall, which it turns out has got an Eggomatic in it, and it kind of stomps forwards and shoots lasers
You jump on its arms, and when you hit it, for some reason, all of the kind of armor comes away from it.
Yeah, I don't know why.
And you've got a few seconds to get a few hits in.
It's a satisfying feeling,
though. The thing is, you can just keep doing that and kill it really easily.
It's a satisfying feeling, though, isn't it? It's like you hit it, and something that sets off something where a moment, there's a pause, and like a few seconds later, all of these layers of armor start stripping off backwards as if sucked off by some kind of big vacuum in the behind it. It's very odd.
No one make a joke about that.
I'm not going to.
Nobody make a joke about that.
Because that boss is quite knockabout.
Hmm.
The only thing that I don't really understand with this boss, because the strange thing is that you, like, you know, it's this great big statue built into the wall, and then it comes to life, you know, and starts slowly marching towards you. You jump on its hand, and then you jump and you hit the jewel in its forehead.
Yeah.
Now, at that point, the armor gets knocked backwards off.
Yeah.
To reveal Dr. Robotnik sitting in his wee machine.
Oh, that's right. That's when you find out.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, oh, haha, it's a joke. You know, this is, and if it were just you hitting Robotnik 8 times from then on, and it was like, he tried to give you a wee fright, then I think that would be an excellent little joke at the end of a stressful level.
Oh, you're right there.
The one thing that throws me is the fact that the armor comes back. And when the facade, like, reestablishes itself.
And that might be the pause I'm thinking of. Does it go off immediately but pauses before it comes back or something?
Yeah, it goes off immediately, and then it's kind of like a second or two later, it kind of like, as if the animation has been played in reverse, it just kind of magnetizes back onto him. And I'm not, like, I don't know what that is.
It's a little bit like, this'll do, we're done, you know? I don't think it has any, I mean, the attacks, it just kind of walks forward. I'm not sure. I think it might shoot lasers, but it never lives long enough to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for me, it's a little bit like, I mean, the fact that it's so breezy is nice because it means it doesn't really, you know, you're not kept waiting with this crap. And to be perfectly honest, by this point, I'm usually hypersonic. So I just went sim. This is the level usually where I get my last super emerald. So I think it's doable on flying battery, but I usually end up doing it on this stage. But I don't mind it because the level itself is so demanding. It's not so bad to have a breezy little boss at the end. You know, it's fine. So yeah, Xenopolis, banger zone, to be perfectly honest. Mostly Act 2, I would say. Mostly Act 2. But I love it.
And how cool it is that it's very clear that in Act 1, you're not in a pyramid, and then in Act 2, you enter the pyramid. At the end of Act 1, you enter the pyramid, and then you're in a pyramid. It's. I know that's really simple, but it's really cool.
Well, it's one of the things that I like the most about Sonic and Knuckles is that it does clearly differentiate between the two zones. The two acts are very different. Now, the next zone has the most pronounced example of that in the entire series, of course.
Okay. The next zone is maybe, it's like, forget Sonic 3 and Knuckles. Forget Sonic the series.
Yeah.
This might be like my favorite level ever. This genuinely might be like if someone were to ask me what's your favorite stage or bit or level or biome, as we say nowadays, it may be Lava Reef Zone. Genuinely. Yeah. This is breathtaking.
Yeah.
How good this zone is.
It's pretty effing good. I have to agree with you on that. I think it's my favourite zone in terms of music, at the very least.
Oh my god, the music.
Oh yes.
Right, I'll tell you what the music for Lava Reef Zone is. It's like, you know when you've got, and you all your life you've had an album, and you love this album, but there's a couple of in-betweeny songs sort of late on that you don't really give enough time to. And then when you're an adult, you realize, that's my favourite song in the world, actually. That's what this is. Mm-hmm. It's not the one anyone thinks of when they think of Sonic 3 and Knuckles straight away, but it's so classy and it's so good. And the tunes, and especially after all that oppressive boom, 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 boom in the previous one, now you've got this laid-back, jazzy tune. It's just great.
It's got a fantastic, I mean, it sounds like there should be vocals, you know. It's classic Dreams Come True-ish kind of like thing, right? I mean, and maybe not Dreams Come True, that's
but, not,
you know,
but
how
yeah.
Green Hill has vocals.
No, I like, yes, absolutely, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah,
it sounds that,
when
fantastic.
You said it should have vocals, that's exactly what I thought of.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Just an unbelievable tune with a fantastic chorus, fantastic bridge to the chorus.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, it's all just, it's outstanding. As for the actual level, it's the most, as I mentioned, this is like, God, I could probably fill a podcast alone with talking about this one, but let's try not to. Lava Reef Zone initially is exactly what you'd expect, in that it's a sort of overgrown rock formation, kind of caves full of fire and robots. And as it goes on, you start to get the impression that this is some kind of a quarry. You know?
Oh, yeah.
You've got huge, like, structures that have been basically smashed through it. Stop me if I'm wrong. Like, that's how I feel.
No,
about
I know
it
what you mean.
General.
I always just think of it as the volcano level.
Yeah.
But not just the volcano level, like, oh, that's one of the, you know, ice volcano. But actually, you feel like you are descending through these lava
yes.
caves. But then, yes, there start to be trolleys that seem to have functions for something
yeah.
and machinery.
Well, like, there's a lot of industry down here.
Mm.
There's, oh God, like, I don't even know where to start. I mean,
yeah.
Shall we start with the kind of, no, I think we save
yeah.
that for the climax.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, sorry to skip ahead a little bit.
No, no, it's,
but, like,
well, by all means, it's
the
fine.
The boss of this level, the boss of Act One, that is to say, is, you don't even realize it. But it's such an amazing little bit of foreshadowing. You go through this entire level, you know, with all the lava and all the, like, industrial robots, the mining robots, even complete, there's, like, a big complicated sprite. It's a large sprite that
yeah.
is, like, it's almost like a cat poistering, like, making biscuits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, like, drilling down and you bop it a few times and then it destroys the floor and the whole floor comes out from under you and you have to land in a little rock instead of landing in the lava.
Yeah.
Do you remember when that same little mini-boss thing, well, it's not even a boss, turned up as a boss in, I think, was it Metroid Fusion that guy's in?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Security robot BOX.
Oh, thanks. Okay, right. I didn't know you had the
yeah.
specific number for it.
Metroid Fusion's literally my favourite game ever. Like, I will... Don't get me started. So, like, there's industry here, right? There is Robotnik
yeah.
is clearly ramping up his operations down here, and the boss is, like, almost unintelligible right now. It's just like a big hand, like
yeah.
an enormous hand that emerges from underneath, like emerges and just tries to clamp down on Sonic.
Yeah.
And you get out the way and you jump on it and it goes
pop its fingers
and it explodes and then comes back down. You don't know what that was.
No.
Yet.
Yeah. You don't think about what it was, because why would you? Yet.
Like, but this is where, like, the full scope of Robotnik's plans really come to fruition. And this is how you make a menacing villain without making them... Like, this is how you make such a comical character a threat.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to boast about, like, oh, I will eat your black heart.
No.
Zavok or whatever the heck. I don't know why I was so gun-shy about swearing there. Sorry. Like... You know, he doesn't need to say that. It's just, like, he can be, like, this big, rotund, comical buffoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you still take him seriously because of what he's doing. The effect
yeah.
that he is clearly having. His clear competence
yeah.
for industry.
I mean, like, we're burying... I'm not that I'm going to skip ahead, obviously, but we're burying the lead because what he does in this level is the moment. It's the best moment in the entire Sonic franchise,
it's
as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely amazing.
We'll get to it, obviously.
And it
but
starts,
we
well,
I'm
it
sure
starts.
Do we all agree that rules?
Yeah,
completely rules.
Absolutely. And it starts early on in this level, because there you are running through these, you know, this normal level, and now and then you'll come to a wide open area. And when you're in a wide open area, you're in the underground caves and caverns, and there are crystals hanging down from... It looks so big, these caves. You're really in this giant underground space. And if you're looking carefully enough, in the distance, just poking down between
yeah.
what appear to be natural pillars of rock holding the ceiling up, is the face of the Death Egg. You are yeah. underneath where it is, where it has landed, and it's just looking down in with this gentle glow to its eyes in the distance, far
yeah.
away.
Like, it's... You probably won't even notice it
yeah.
the first time through if you're
no.
not looking for it.
No.
Yeah.
It blends in with the details of the cavern wall.
And as the two acts continue, the face yeah. gets bigger. And it's like, okay, the way that they do this is like, you know, you reach a segment
mm-hmm.
like that has a wall in the background, whether those be rocks or whether that be like Robotnik's metal or whatever. You know, you pass through a cave, as it were, within this giant cave, and then you come out the other end. And like at certain points, they'll have replaced the background with one that has a bigger version of the Death Egg. And yep. do you know what it puts me in mind of the most?
What?
It's Majora's Mask. Oh, it's like just yes. having this big face looming over you, getting closer and closer and closer, and there's nothing that acknowledges it. Like the game doesn't stop you and go, dun, yeah. dun, dun, look mm-hmm. at that. It's just this weird, ominous kind of feeling that's hanging over the entire level.
Can I interject with something real quick?
Absolutely.
I've pulled this level up on YouTube, and I never noticed that before in my entire life.
What?
I never noticed it. I knew it was there at the end, obviously, when you see it at the end. I never noticed it in the background, and I never noticed the eyes glowing, and now this game's even better.
Yep. Sonic 3 and Knuckles. It's what it is it's a continuation. We're talking about when
it just
they
keeps on giving.
We're talking about when they set things up. This is a continuation of the thing they set up in like Mushroom Hill Zone, where
yeah.
going to different areas increases what Robotnik is doing. And of course, in this case, it's just that you are getting physically closer to where this thing is.
Yeah. What this level does for me that I really appreciate is it's the absolute gameplay opposite of Sandopolis.
Yeah.
It's rammed with stuff. Mm. There are bad nicks everywhere. There are spikes and fire and switches and just everything constantly is happening around you. You are in the middle of something. You are in the middle of some industrial stuff happening.
Mm.
You're like, it is, again, completely organic storytelling. There's the pipelines everywhere,
mm-hmm.
you know? Everything. It's just
everything is moving.
Done.
The whole thing feels alive, which is yeah. the complete opposite of Sandopolis Act 2, which felt literally dead.
And that's that's what it's meant to feel like.
Exactly.
It's like, they are saying to you, like, you are, this is a different type of challenge to the previous level.
Yeah, it is throwing something new at you, both mechanically and aesthetically, like, every few seconds in Act 1. Mm. Like, there is a completely unique bit that is the raddest thing in existence at this point. This would have blown my tiny little child mind when there's like a half pipe ramp. It's not a loop-to-loop. It's like a bevel. It's kind of like you run kind of like round this big, what are they called? Like a big berm. And then there's a ramp that flicks you up. So you're heading like left to right and you go around this weird like three-dimensional slope, and Sonic has, if not completely unique, then very rarely seen sprites for going, for the perspective and everything of him going around this half-pipe berm and then launching off. So you go left to right, go round it, and then you're going right to left.
Yeah.
It feels almost like it's moved you into the foreground a little bit, even though it hasn't. It's unbelievably cool.
Yeah.
And like that is shown to you once for a few seconds, and then discard
it. Yeah, why'd they put that in? Like, all it does is create work for them, but for us, I don't know what it does, but it just makes it feel like there's no end to what can be in this.
I mean, I'm feeling like that right now because, like I mentioned, I never noticed that death egg before, and I think that's really easy to miss.
Yes.
Like, looking for it. I'm not looking at the background, so now another thing has added to this game that makes me like it even more.
Yeah, you only really notice it when you become like
it is now up to 15
an obsessive
out of 10.
Replayer. Yeah. you know, like the statues, like the Sonic statues, if you climb up to the top of Hydro City. It's like that. Once you're obsessed, you start looking everywhere.
One thing I want to note about this level as well, real quick. The Sonic
Hydro City, if you're Knuckles and you... Right, start of Hydro City, you play as Knuckles. Fire it up, Shay. Play as Knuckles. Fall down the waterfall at the start. Like, does he fall down the waterfall? Anyway, left of the level.
Yeah, yeah.
Left of the level, and just start climbing up the wall. And if you go all the way to the ceiling, you will see that the ancient echidnas have made statues of Sonic the Hedgehog as you finally see the top of the background art, and it's the only time you can ever see that.
I love it.
What the? Oh my goodness gracious me, folks!
Fire it up, Shay. Get
it's
it done.
A journey of discovery. With a journey of discovery. Something I want to say before we move on to Act 2, though, although we can't move on to Act 2 without... This level, the way that it does create its mood, the way that it does tell its story in ways that are quite subtle, as well as, you know, the blatantly obvious cutscenes at the end of the levels.
Yep.
But the fact that when you come into it, it's collapsing around you. You are landing on collapsing blocks and platforms, and there are rocks everywhere, gives you this impression of, like... This place is barely holding together. This is a very, very unstable place, and Robotnik's not helped by putting all his shit in all the walls, basically. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Well, the floor is constantly crumbling in Act 1.
Yeah.
Again, inside of a volcano. How perfect is that?
And you're breaking through the walls as well. Like, that's also worth noting, I think. They've installed those elevators that you have to do a spin dash to move them up and down, like, to make it feel like you're going through almost like a mine. That's been a man-made space, you know? Like, Robotnik's been here, and he's been doing something. He's been looking for something. What's he been looking for? What's he been doing, you know? And then, of course, Act 2. You get to the end of Act 1, you fight those hands you mentioned, and when you destroy them, what happens?
The
entire zone dries up. It dries out. I don't know how to describe it.
Okay, so sorry, can I take charge of this bit? Because this is... So you reach the end of Act 1, you destroy the big hand. What was that? Who knows? You know, at this point, you don't really, you know, this is knockabout. The first time, if you missed the death egg at the beginning, like Stu did, this is your first real moment of, oh, something's going on. Because the lava crystallizes, and the music that starts playing is the same music you've been hearing every time you hit the Emerald Chamber. Every time you entered a giant ring and found all the chaos emeralds surrounding the master emerald, this music was playing.
Yeah,
and that's the moment
of
like.
It didn't look dissimilar to this either, you know? It's the same colors.
Like, and this is the moment where you're like, oh, I'm here.
Mm. Yeah.
And like, it's electrifying.
It is incredible.
Like, even describing it is giving the goosebumps.
Yeah. You realize you've come the long way round to where you got teleported off to. It wasn't another dimension. It wasn't a magic place. You've got here by all of this work you've done.
But you other than the obvious visual and audio cues, you know this is special because this ain't a remix of the Lava Reef music.
No,
you're somewhere else entirely.
Yeah.
Like, this,
you are not in the next act of the same zone. The feel of Lava Reef Act 2 is nothing like Act 1. It doesn't share almost any of the same obstacles. It's new. It's a new zone.
It's gone from, like, well, of course, lava, like hot reds, to, like, turquoise and blues.
And crystals.
Yeah.
There's crystals growing out of everything.
And the music is melancholy. It's not, like...
Yeah.
Hyper, like, what's the word? Like, New Jack kind of beats, you know?
Yeah,
it's melancholy.
It's mystical.
It's like, mystical and sad and interesting and what the hell's going on, you know?
Like,
it's,
and the level slows down as well. Like, the level isn't quite as, like, chock-a-block as the first one in terms of throwing everything at you. It's still got a load of interesting stuff, but it's not as frantic with it.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's, oh, what a beauty. What a beauty. Oh, Lava Reef Zone, marry me.
So Act 2, as soon as you hit the capsule at the end of Act 1, it crystallizes.
Yeah.
As discussion, now dealing with deep blues and purples and not reds, which to me gives the impression, now maybe I'm wrong on this one, it's just a sort of vibe I get. What you're in now is Lava Reef unspoiled.
Yeah.
More or less. There is tech there, but it's not Robotnik tech, you know? Robotnik's there, and he destroys it later, as we all discuss. But until that point, there's not really as much lava. There's not as much anything. There's not as many badniks, only those little stones that he's hiding under, you know?
No, they've still got the eye stalks that like puff out
smoke. Toxomisters.
Yes, sorry, toxomisters. Of course, that's what they're called. What,
right? Can you guys explain to me? Is there a reason why I spent my whole life not sure if they were toxomisters or toxomeisters? Was I looking at the languages again? Is that what's happened there?
I don't know.
I think this is the first time I've ever heard their name, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're toxomisters anyway. And I think it's because they're a little pole with an eye on the top, and they release mist that is toxic. But I thought it was because they were like a little Mr. Toxic Man, toxomisters.
it's just occurring to me exactly what you thought and how you reached that point, and I guarantee that I would have thought the same thing if I had read the instruction booklet as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the toxomisters. Mm-hmm. Hello, sirs.
And then you got the female version, the toxic misses.
We've all got one of those, haven't we, lads?
You know what? I was drinking.
I set him up, he knocks them down.
Yeah. Apologies to all the wonderful women in my life who have been great. Lava Reef Zone, though. This is the problem with Lava Reef Zone, is there's just... It's the thing for me with Lava Reef, it's all about that end sequence. And I don't want to skip over the middle, because it's great.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I think the gravity of that has just pulled us in. I think we need to blow our loads. I think we just need to talk about it.
Okay. So it starts with a flight of stairs.
Yes. There is no indication, apart from the fact that as you're climbing those stairs, that death egg face is right there.
Yeah, and you had noticed that one, presumably.
You are approaching the death egg. Now, once you reach the top of those stairs, you look up and you see the Nuxmeister.
There he is.
Mr. Nuxmeister.
Yeah, the Nuxmeister.
Nuxomister. Standing there. He's got a big rock. And you're looking at him, and Sonic's looking up sprite in this game is quite funny. It almost looks like he's begging Knuckles, like saying, please don't.
Yeah, just
but
can we not?
He does. Knuckles pushes it. You're caught in the rock. It's rolls like, you down, it down,
was,
down.
Yeah, I always thought it was a big ice cube, but I think it's a giant crystal. I think it's a giant uncut lump of gem.
Well, this is a little bit jarring at this stage, because this is the first time that we have seen Knuckles in three zones.
Mm. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Like, this is the first time we've seen him since the beginning of Mushroom Hill.
Yep.
Mm.
And this is the first time this entire game that he's like stopped off to do his little like chuckle and then lead you into a trap.
Yeah, and you know why? It's because he nipped off into another ring and he's been here ever since.
Yeah.
Oh my god, of course, yeah.
Mm.
I bet.
Though I do wonder, when the thing is that, I mean, he's not, because you play as him in Knuckles mode.
Yeah,
he goes to all the levels. Sorry.
Okay.
But in Knuckles mode, am I right in saying this, that when you play as Knuckles, you don't have to have the ghosts in Sandopolis? Am I imagining that?
I think that's true as well, but
I believe that's correct, yeah, because Knuckles is too savvy. Knuckles wouldn't fall for that. You know? He knows this island.
Yeah, but okay. Now, getting back to the end sequence of this zone, because it's mind-meltingly good. Now, you get knocked down off the screen.
Yeah,
okay?
He pushes the crystal, and you get tumbled with it all the way down the
stairs. You land back in the fiery bit of Lava Reef, with some lava below you, and in the background, the Death Egg. And you're like, okay, here comes the boss. The Death Egg's eyes light up and flash the entire screen.
Yeah.
And when it comes back, everything's fucked.
Yeah. The Death Egg itself, we're now so close to the Death Egg that it's bigger than the screen now. So it's already scary. And then, everything's lava.
The platforms you're standing on collapse, so you will take a hit if you're not immediately moving.
Yeah.
You have to get on the right platforms.
Yeah.
Then dreaded auto-scroll sequence begins.
Yes.
And this sequence is the hardest bit of the entire game.
Yeah, probably.
In the sense that you will die if you are not playing right here. There is no second chances. You take a hit, you're probably going to die.
And what you're taking a hit from is in the background, you see Robotnik show up in his Eggomatic thingy, and he's just launching missiles at you. So as the screen auto-scrolls, you've got these targets appearing, and so you have to like avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
And these batteries, these barrages of missiles are all coming out, and they're destroying the platforms. So you've got to be across them for that reason as well.
Yeah, and you're jumping across quite wide, collapsing platform gaps with instant death below you, which also collapse under you.
Yeah, and before you know it,
this section is quite short.
Yes,
but the impact that it has is unbelievably great.
Yeah.
Like, and of this course, it gets better from there. It just gets better from there, really.
This
like,
is the moment you know you're at the end game. This is the moment you know that you have reached
the
climax.
I'll tell you why as well.
I mean, that's the messed up thing, is that the rest of the game is end game.
Yeah, like, from here on, it's endgame. But
from here on, it's one long sustained climax.
A thing that happens here, like a pig coming.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I thought you meant approaching, like a like. Oh no, a pig's coming!
No,
from now on, my life is just like this. Now,
Dave.
It's like as soon as you see a pig approaching, that's the rest of your life. You'll never escape it.
I'm both impressed and disgusted at how quickly and accurately you pulled that bit of knowledge out for the joke.
Oh well, to be honest, Shay, when you learn that pigs have 30-minute orgasms, it's all you think about.
You're trying to live up to that for the rest of your life.
I haven't really thought about it in a while, if I'm being honest. I was too impressed by Lava Reef Zone.
The next thing that happens is you arrive at a lava waterfall, a lava lake and lava waterfall. And as you go down it on platforms that are going down it, this is the first time in the game that it hasn't looked friendly in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Everything in this game, whatever oppressive situation you're in, at least it looks like Sonic. If this bit actually starts to look like another game, like a bigger boys game, because
like
the
Thunder
whole
Force
screen,
yeah,
the whole
yeah.
screen is just lava going down, and there's this brilliant heat haze ripple effect that's going up in lines across the screen, and you can see it rippling the background, you know, the death egg as you go down there, and down you go into the depths of hell. It's really scary.
Yeah. And of course, once you reach the bottom, you are fighting this boss that what happens is that you're on a sloped platform that slides towards Robotnik as he bursts out of the lava in this spiked machine you can't hit.
He's at the he goes to one end of the screen and it causes everything to tilt so that
you
he's at the lowest point and platforms are sliding towards him.
Remarkably precise jumps.
Yeah, you got to jump from platform to platform as they slide down the diagonal. And it's lava between the platforms.
Yeah,
you can't
there's
touch
bombs.
The ground.
He's dropping bombs which then slide down into him. And now, what this says to me as a piece of, again, organic storytelling is it's almost like Robotnik has gone, you know what? I'm sick of this. I'm killing this fucker.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done with this. Yeah. Like, he can't even jump on me anymore. Forget it. You're done.
Yeah.
And I love that. It's almost like he's desperate.
Yeah.
He's just like, no, you're not getting to the fucking death egg. I know what you did last time.
Yeah.
You're not getting in my death egg. You know, my death egg's well good. You can't come in.
Like, what I love about it is just the most sustained and intense bit of actual, honest-to-goodness, straight-up traditional platforming in this game is a boss fight.
Because
he hits himself. Yeah. He throws the bombs, they land in the lava, and they get sucked into him, and he hits himself. So all you have to do is survive. All you have to do is just jump on the platforms.
In an incredibly high-pressure situation.
I will say that this is the hardest bit for me in the game. I always die on this.
It feels to me like more like a Sonic CD boss.
Yes.
Because you're not directly hitting it.
That's very apt.
Now, if you're lucky enough to get to this situation, to get to this with a fire shield, this is kind of a joke.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, this is, again, what I love about this is that if you have a fire shield and you can avoid the non-fire obstacles well enough to get to this point, then it's a laugh.
But I can't. They give you a fire shield on the way down the lava. There's a fire shield there. But I always lose it.
You have to be savvy enough to look for it, though, yeah.
Well, yeah. But I always lose it. No, I think you have to. Don't you have to go over there to get on the platform that takes
you
down?
No, you don't know.
Oh, okay.
You can just stand there, and if you stand there, it's very easy to miss, actually.
Oh, okay, then.
Yeah.
But I always lose it. I always get it, and then I always lose it at some point. I must either just hit a bomb or hit him or something. I don't know what it is.
Well, the thing is, if you have the shield, it's quite easy to get complacent and get hit by the bombs.
Yeah.
If you're using the dasher quite a lot, you know. I mean, it's still quite tricky to be on a moving platform and dodge things that are coming towards you.
Yeah.
Well, especially because if you get sucked down into Robotnik's like pit, you'll lose the shield as well. So you have to be... You have to be fairly precise. You kind of need to stick fairly precisely to the middle of the screen.
Mm.
Yeah.
But I do just love that the game goes, okay, here is a fire level. We have given you this fire immune shield throughout the game. And if you collect it, they don't like break their own rules. They don't go, it doesn't work in lava. It only works in fire. They just go, you're immune to that then.
Yeah.
Well, it's a game that has consistent, basically consistent mechanics, even when that might neuter something they intended to be quite difficult.
Yeah,
it's gone whatever.
And I think that's more valuable because it allows you to formulate a strategy. Yeah. And it doesn't subvert that strategy or say, nuh-uh, well, that would make this boss too easy, so you can't do that. I think that is... I've never encountered a scenario where I have felt that was the wrong decision.
Well, to me, it's superficially similar to sequence breaking in that you have... You get the feeling, you get the vibe, like you get to feel like you've got one over the game. A bit.
Yeah.
When the game knew exactly what you were doing. And it's hard to explain, but I do understand it. It's that,
well done,
you got here with the fire shield, now this is going to be a bit easier. It's going to be a bit different.
Like, it feels like the game is respecting and rewarding your investment, because you have gone... Oh, I'm in the fire thing, and I could be immune to fire.
Yeah.
So you think about that. That means that you are into the game. You're thinking about it. You're like, you have picked up on all of its rules, and you're trying to put them into practice. You're trying to apply them in a situation, in a practical situation. Mm. And I think it is like, I find it very disappointing when a game doesn't respect that. When like you come up with a solution that the game then either just because the developers didn't think of it, or more egregiously because the developers did think of it and went, no, we want this to be difficult though.
Yeah.
I think that is missing the forest for the trees, in that it is not respecting that you are into this, you are invested. It's very like sequence breaking in that regard, because it's like, if you can put the pieces together well enough to go, oh, hang on a minute, if I do this and this and this, then I can get there early, even though I'm not supposed to. And again, that's you into the game. That's you enjoying yourself.
Mm. But I want to say something real quick, which is relevant to what you're saying, which is...
Of course.
There's something that the 3D games largely don't do, with the exception of Adventure and Generations, oddly enough. Because Sonic Generations... I remember seeing people play the Chemical Plant Zone in that and completely subverting it, like going on crazy alternate routes I didn't even know existed that were clearly actually planned out by the developers. Like at the beginning, you got this whole twisting network of pipes, and you think when you're playing it, that's just scenery. It's like the people who spin dash up the buildings in Speed Highway on Sonic Adventure, and it turns out that's legit.
Yeah, they turns out life there's up stuff there, up everything. There.
Okay. There's stuff up there. They knew what you were doing. That's the difference between a good Sonic game and a bad Sonic game.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
It's a good Sonic game is a game about freedom. Maybe freedom within certain parameters, yes.
Yeah.
But within those parameters, it lets you play how you want. And then, a bad Sonic game locks you into playing Puyo Puyo with Dr. Robotnik for some reason. Who knows? I don't know. I'm joking. That's really disingenuous.
I love that bit.
But you get what I mean, though. Like, the game is saying, here's the playground. Have your own fun in the playground. You got to get to the end, yes, but you get to the end how you want. And then if it locks you into one specific sort of thing, one specific way of playing, then it's doing it wrong. And Sonic needs to be better than that. And... that's why Sonic 3 and Knuckles is the best. That's why Sonic CD is the second best, or the best equally, because it lets you do what you want. I think that brings us to a point of maybe wrapping up the episode after we finish with Love and Reef.
Yeah. I did want to just add something like about this final sequence.
Me too.
Yeah.
What really, really impresses me about this entire thing, from the moment that you see the Death Egg in the background to when Knuckles crashes you down through the floor, to the moment when the Death Egg's eyes light up and the palette changes, what impresses me is the scale of it. Like, it's not just that the Death Egg is bigger than the entire screen. It doesn't fit on the screen. That background literally does not fit on the screen. It's not just that. It is the fact that there are tiny little details, like little specks of light, like the light in a window in a distant skyscraper, that make you realise how big this thing is actually supposed to be. It is enormous.
Yeah.
And the fact that one, like, glow from it, one, just one, not even gesture, because it's not alive, it's just this, yeah, like, unfeeling face. Just its eyes light up. It's very creepy. Completely changes everything about the level. All of its surroundings are completely dominated by this giant face in the sky. Mm. It makes you feel like an ant. It makes, yeah, you feel, mm, tiny.
It's the first moment in the Sonic series where you kind of go, wow, this Robotnik guy is kind of for real.
Yeah.
And what, yeah, happens, I mean, not to spoil, well, not to say spoil, everyone knows, but not to get too far ahead, but that's not even the most, no, devastating moment of scale in the whole game.
Oh.
As we'll discover when we reach the very end in the next episode, I expect.
We expect.
This is when the gloves come off, and the rest of the game is you forcing those gloves back on, except up his ass.
Yeah. This is how far we're going, listeners, but the next thing that happens in the game, even, is just, like,
yeah,
amazing.
The rest of the game is wall-to-wall the best things you've ever seen in your entire life.
Yeah.
You know, it's an... I know this is a controversial thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. It's like an apology for Sonic 2's endgame.
Oh!
In my opinion. It's like, yeah, sorry about that. Sorry about the fact that Sky Chase is crap. Sorry about the Winged Fortress being a bit dodgy. Sorry about the fact that Death Egg is just two rooms. Here's a proper ending for this series,
it's case characters. It's interesting to hear you say that, because, like, I remember it being beloved and iconic, all of that stuff.
I mean, you know, it is, but people don't understand.
In retrospect, I see what you mean by all of those things, yeah.
Okay. Mm. I don't hate, I like Winged Fortress, I like Death Egg, but this, to me, there's no contrast. There's no contest. Like, you get Sonic 3 and Knuckles, and you get Sonic 2, and Sonic 2 might as well be in the toilet with all my dumps. Like, yeah, forget it, mate.
Yep.
And on that bombshell, sorry, Top Gear reference, on that discussion of my dumps once again, I'd like to bring this episode to a roaring climax, a 30-minute pig roaring climax. Now, Dave, Bulmer,
yeah,
where can our listeners find and enjoy you on the internet?
Well, you can find and enjoy me rabbiting on about Sonic as much as you like. Sonic the Comic the Podcast is the name of my show, as you well know, because you all listen to it already on the back of these episodes we've done. Don't you?
Of course you do.
STCTP, which stands for Sonic the Comic the Podcast, that's how you remember the letters, STCTP.zone, which, if you want a way to remember it, fits the EastEnders theme tune very well. That is where you will find...
STCP.zone.
No, not that.
It does. STCP.zone. It does work.
Oh, it flipping does and all.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's put them together.
STCP.zone. STCP.zone. It's a good podcast with Chris and with David.
Yeah.
It's a talk about the stuff children used to buy in 1993.
You know how in America they had some Sonic comics, but they were nothing to
you
do.
You got you, it's for free. Sorry, go on.
Yes. Well, here in the UK, we had a Sonic comic at the same time, actually based on the games. And
it was actually based.
it flipping was. We're into the ones right now where Lou Stringer is basically leading children's revolts and teaching us about fascism and stuff. In direct calls to action. We go through that and we talk about each issue, but also we look at the adverts, the game reviews, everything about the time. Well, I even every issue, I crack open my diary, my teenage diary from the 2 weeks that issue was out, and you get to find out what it was like to be alive then and a Sonic fan. That is what it's about.
I am going to keep listening solely for the fact that I'm waiting for the diary entry about wanking. I know it's going to come eventually, and I just really want to hear it.
That's what the entry says.
I looked down at my trousers earlier and I said, hello.
Shay, Mr. Shay McDonald, where can our fine listeners find your fun things on the internet and enjoy them?
You can find me on Twitter at shayma_, that's shayma_. You will find me talking rubbish, no doubt. I'm currently deep in the Pokemon mines where We're coming out the other end, folks. We're getting Pokemon's. Towards the end of this.
Yeah.
But yes, you can also find me on Twitch at... I've been doing a lot of streaming, mainly Pokemon again. Sorry. At twitch.tv/Shamey_. And you can just punch Shamey into YouTube and you will find my videos and perhaps some streams.
Yeah. And if you dig back far enough, maybe some embarrassing forum posts. Who knows? because Shay, you're gearing up for another big old video, aren't you?
I am indeed. I'm gearing up for another. It's threatening 10 hours.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, that's a real Shamey video.
What's the matter with you? Why can't you just make a small video?
Well, this is...
that'll be rendering for a week.
Because I have cleanly knocked myself... Like, all evidence to the contrary, I have knocked myself right out of doing this. I've completely scunnered myself on doing a video project that big again. And now I'm just like, okay, I know how to say a lot more with a lot less.
Yeah.
Because the thing is that like with like more specificity comes like more justification that you have to do. Like the more broadly applicable you can make a sentence, the less people are going to challenge you on it and the more people are going to think you're correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yes, I think this is probably going to be the last big project.
I honestly don't blame you. It seems like they must consume you completely. I just can't.
This has been hell.
You're like Christian Bale in The Machinist, except with making a YouTube video about Pokemon. That's a big, obtuse reference for you there.
I only know him from Batman. I'm like when Batman tries to crawl out the hole.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. Yeah. Piss, piss, bastard, bastard, piss, piss, bastard, bastard. Anyway, I'm Stuart Jip, as you well know. This has been Retronauts. Thank you very much for listening. If you like Retronauts, if you thought that bollocks that we just did was good, you can support Retronauts. And if you go to patreon.com/Retronauts, you will find many ways to do so. But the most compelling way, in my humble opinion, is for a mere $5 a month, or £3 something in English money, probably, you'll get not only you'll get two extra episodes every month, completely exclusive to Patreon, so all the scrubs who don't pay won't be hearing those episodes. You'll be on top of the world. But not only that, you get the weekly episodes early as well, a week early. So by the time the scrubs get round to them, they'll be like, oh my god, that Sonic episode was so good. And you'll be like, I heard it. I'm on to like the Asterix episode now. Don't really care about that anymore, you know. And also for that $5, you will be getting access to Diamond Fight's tremendous This Week in Retro columns, which they also record as a podcast, so you can listen to them, and they're very good and often very personal and very interesting, and I recommend them very highly. You'll also be able to access the Retronauts Discord, so you can argue with me in real time, and I will swear at you and I will get told off. Thanks very much. I've got a book out probably by the time this goes live, and it's called All Games Are Good. Although I'm pretty sure by the time this goes live, it's going to be completely sold out. So, you're out of luck. But just in the odd chance, there's a couple of copies left. You know, limited run games or possibly elsewhere. I'm not even 100% sure where they're going to be sold just yet. So that's exciting. Thank you very much. I'm very bad at ending podcasts. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to do the EastEnders theme again with STCTP.zone. STCP.zone.
I need to get me one. I wonder if you can add, like, Shamey to the Hollyoaks theme or something.
What I've realised is that it fits if you say it wrong. It isn't STCP, it's STCTP. So that's...
STCTPZONE.
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, I got it wrong every time. That's great to know. Thanks for that.
Yeah, every time. And it's specifically our URL, so people won't be able to...
You got it wrong every single time.
It's all right. I forgot to say I'm called Demon Tomato Dave as well, so it's all right.
That's all right. Everyone already knows that.
Well... You know, sounds to me like, Stu, like you've been a little bit anachronistic.
Nice.
Do, 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 do.